From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, how the border took center stage at the Republican National Convention.
America needs a president who will secure our border.
Governor Abbott continues to say, secure the border, secure the border, secure the border. But we don't have any definition of what securing the border looks like to them other than words saying secure the border.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In this heated, tight race for the White House, this week's Republican National Convention was in many ways a celebration of their nominee, Donald Trump. Since he rode down the escalator, Trump has made the border a central issue to excite his base. And in 2024 at the RNC, there were fewer crowd chants of build that wall and more chants of send them back while waving signs that read deport them all. And Texas was in the middle of it. There were three Texas Republican politicians who took the stage over the week to push that narrative: Senator Ted Cruz, Representative Monica Dela Cruz, and Governor Greg Abbott.
Biden has welcomed into our country rapists, murderers, even terrorists.
In recent months, the border issue has diminished as President Biden's efforts there have paid off by greatly reducing the number of unauthorized border crossings. But you wouldn't know that by listening to the speech Abbott delivered to the GOP delegates.
The president's most sacred duty is to secure our country. Donald Trump fulfilled that duty by eliminating illegal immigration. Joe Biden deserted his duty.
Of course, this was his opportunity to provide his political narrative without being constrained by the facts.
Under Joe Biden, illegal immigration has skyrocketed. Under his watch, around 11 million immigrants have crossed our border illegally.
Sarah Cruz is with the ACLU of Texas and was an author of their May report critical of Abbott's Operation Lone Star. That report is titled Operation Lone Star: Misinformation and Discrimination in Texas Border Enforcement. According to the ACLU of Texas, Operation Lone Star is an unconstitutional operation that is primarily racial profiling and arresting people who pose no threat to public safety, and then forcing them into a separate and unequal criminal legal system. Cruz said Abbott and much of the GOP convention was heavily focused on immigration and border security, but not in a way that is rooted in what is actually happening on the border.
I think there were several things, right? It was heavily focused on immigration. I think the whole 7-minute speech was heavily focused on immigration and Texas efforts to enforce immigration law in place of the federal government. But I think, you know, what the focus should be is really what has Operation Lone Star cost Texans. And I think that is definitely something that the governor didn't highlight in his speech, and it's something that should be part of the conversation.
So he should have said, my $4 billion Operation Lone Star highlighted that this is something that is costly.
I don't think that he would do that, but it does have to be part of the conversation. And it is something that people should be aware of, that this is not even just a $4 billion program, but that is an $11.2 billion program that, and this money has continued to grow, right? And this is over only 3 years of an enforcement operation. And the funds, the taxpayer funds that go to this program will continue to increase. And I think we've already seen that it's funded to at least 2025. So the impacts that it'll have and the cost to Texans will continue to increase.
Governor Abbott would talk about illegal immigrants and about how Biden is processing illegal immigrants, he used that phrase a lot. And he didn't seem to be concerned about distinguishing that these were not actually illegal immigrants. These were people who were granted asylum.
And yes, and I think there's two things to this, right? Is that this rhetoric has been really harmful for Texas communities and for border communities especially. And we've seen this through, you know, some of the convoys that have gone through places like in Eagle Pass, and even the shooting, the horrible tragedy that happened in El Paso a few years ago. And this has been a result of this rhetoric. And I think another thing that we need to point to is that a lot of politicians continue to mischaracterize what is really happening at the border by using phrases such as open borders, when we know that the Biden administration has continued to enact policies that do curb migration, but also limit access to asylum at the border.
So when they say open borders, and that does seem to be something that people respond to at this convention, the delegates, what are they actually saying? Because in actuality, they're not open borders. There is a border patrol. We have enforcement. Yes. We do have all sorts of measures in place in order to prevent illegal immigration, apprehend and deport people who are in the country without authorization. This is happening, but you wouldn't hear that from Abbott.
No, of course not. And I think there's also another thing to point out here, right? Is you mentioned it right now, the enforcement. Immigration enforcement is one of the most costly enforcement, I believe, in the entire country. We put more money towards immigration enforcement than we do into any other law enforcement agencies in the country. And so we already have measures that are restricting, again, asylum and migration at the border. And so, 11.2 billion dollars in addition to the federal enforcement that we already have at the border.
Also, there's continued confusion, and it seems deliberate, because I know that Abbott is a smart man. He knows these things, that trying to connect illegal immigration with the deadly flow of drugs like fentanyl. These are two separate issues, and they should be handled differently. Stopping illegal immigration, if you were able to completely stop it, which is impossible, but if you were able to, you would have zero impact on the flow of drugs like fentanyl into the United States, right?
Yes. And so in response to your question, I think we can look back at one of the, so the ACLU of Texas team had recently published a report, and I think we talked about it a little bit the last time, on some of the findings from Operation Lone Star, because, you know, the mission of it is to stop the flow of people and drugs into Texas. But one of our findings was that the overwhelming majority of people who were charged under Operation Lone Star for smuggling of people and drugs into Texas were people who are already legally present in the United States. Those not people who were arriving at the border, people who were seeking asylum. It was people who were legally present. And I believe they accounted for 75% of magistration under Operation Lone Star. For those specific charges.
Well, as I understand it, they're American citizens who are the ones who are, and even some of them are connected to law enforcement. They're the ones that are bringing vast quantities of these drugs into the United States.
I would have to look at the breakdown of that, but to just answer your question, that was what in some of our findings, yes, that it was American citizens and people who were already legally present in the United States.
We had Abbott talking about the razor wire, concertina wire, which went to the Supreme Court, and which he lost at the Supreme Court, a 5-4 decision, which said that the president does have the operational control of the border. Of course, he framed it in a way that made it seem like that the president, Biden, was in favor of illegal immigration. But, you know, even after this decision, we have not seen efforts to remove vast amounts of razor wire. It was just giving them an opportunity to rescue people who were caught in the razor wire. So we continue to see a misrepresentation of the facts, even on the stage during the Republican National Convention.
100%. And that's one of the reasons that the ACLU of Texas team wanted to dig in a little bit deeper into the data and into the state's data specifically, because Governor Abbott continues to proclaim the success of Operation Lone Star. And so, you know, we found our findings were refute a lot of Abbott's claims to success, like I mentioned, with the identifying who actually is committing some of these more harsher crimes. But in addition, that an overwhelming amount of the charges under Operation Lone Star are for trespassing and not for some of these harsher crimes that are committed by people who are legally present in the United States.
And during the speech of Abbott, we saw people waving signs saying, deport them all, chanting, send them back. How does that sound to the ACLU of Texas if Trump becomes president again and enacts these policies of mass deportations? What does that look like to the ACLU?
I think we have to think about first the human impact that it would have in Texas, but across the nation. We saw how some of these harsher policies from the previous administration really impacted people under family separation. There were, I believe, even years after this policy ended, there were children who were still separated from their families. And so we would, and Texas would probably be the path of least resistance. And so that concerns us a lot because we have already built this infrastructure under Operation Lone Star. And what would that mean for, and I think the concern is what that would mean for mass deportations. And would we see some of the harshest staging of these policies here in Texas? And I think that's one of our biggest concerns. But again, the human impact that it would have, the violations, people would be separated from their families, people who have been here for years and years and contributing to Texas and contributing to the United States would be forcibly removed. And these are people, again, that we, that contribute to our country and to our communities. And so that's something that we do have to remember, that these policies, these harsher policies do have very real life impacts every day. And it would be absolutely devastating to Texas. And this is not the values that one, the United States has claimed to uphold, because we have, the United States has made that commitment to protect people. And this would just, I think, fall very, very short of that.
We have a historic precedent to look at, a mass deportation effort under President Eisenhower. And I'm going to say what the operation was called. It's offensive. It's called Operation Wetback. And there were American citizens who were deported during that operation. Should people be concerned that if there was a repeat of that type of an operation, mass deportation, that there would be American citizens who would somehow be caught up in those dragnets?
I think that's a really valid concern. One of the ways that I believe the previous administration proclaims that they would carry out mass deportations is by federalizing the National Guard into and sending them into other states, which is a very, very big, another big concern of ours, because when we put that power that has been only for the federal government into the hands of other law enforcement agencies or other agencies to enforce these laws that don't have the training, that don't have the background in this, that we could see U.S. citizens falling under this net of mass deportations. And again, that was something that we were highlighting under SB4, some of the potential impacts, because we would be placing a power that is only for the federal government into the hands of other enforcement agencies that don't regularly enforce this, and this is not their training.
So moving forward, if we have Donald Trump reelected into the White House, what does that look like for the ACLU of Texas?
I think we are preparing for either way the election could go. And so we're ready to continue protecting the rights of Texans, no matter which administration is elected in the fall.
Sarah Cruz is the policy and advocacy strategist on border and immigrants' rights for the ACLU of Texas. Buying rounds of ammunition has never been easier now that a bullet-selling vending machine is operational at a Central Texas grocery store. It could be the first of many to come into the state. Texas Public Radio's Kayla Padilla reports from Lowe's Market in Canyon Lake.
When you walk into the Lowe's on Sattler Road, the ammunition vending machine sits next to the ATM. It's been there for a couple weeks now, and customers are coming to the store just to use it for the first time.
I bought some 9mm ammo. It was overpriced, but I wanted to try out the vending machine.
Customers must be 21 or older to make a purchase. To confirm their identity, they must enter their state ID into the slot and then do a facial recognition scan to confirm they are who they say they are. Lowe's customer Logan says this makes it more secure than other methods of ammunition purchase. Logan declined to share his last name to protect his identity.
They do have their protocol set up or procedure where you have to scan your ID and have to be 21 or older. So that is a nice feature to it. Academy, you could be 18 and buy your rifle and shotgun rounds. Handgun rounds, they're strictly all 21 and up. And buying from one of these machines is only 21 and up. I read that in the terms and conditions before I got onto the machine.
Grant Major is the CEO of American Rounds. He says that they've partnered with grocery stores that want to offer ammunition to their customers and make their businesses more competitive. In addition to Texas, the machines are also installed in Alabama and Oklahoma. He says grocery stores in multiple states have expressed interest.
They would like to offer their customers the opportunity to buy ammunition at their stores.
In most states, ammunition for shotguns and rifles can be sold to individuals 18 years of age or older. Major says that making the vending machine exclusively 21 plus for all ammunition purchases allows for the vending machine to be a safer option than off-the-shelf or online sales. According to him, his method of selling ammo is the safest in the country. So I decided to see how secure the machine really was and try to purchase ammunition myself.
Okay, so it's giving me a warning. Purchasers at American Rounds assume all risks related to ammunition use. Must be 21 or older to purchase from American Rounds. You have to agree to terms and conditions. So they have different categories: handgun rounds, rifle rounds, shotgun rounds.
I decided on a 50-count box of 9mm A&H ammunition, which was being sold for $23.80 with taxes. It asked me to insert my state ID, so I did. Then it asked me to remove any glasses or hat I was wearing, so I did that too. I looked into the camera, it scanned my face, and I got rejected. I was wearing a ponytail that morning, and in my ID, I had my hair down. So I assumed that's why it rejected me, and Major agrees.
So those scanners are the same ones that TSA uses. I know beards are a big trend right now. And if someone has one of those beards and it's not on their ID, it's very likely they're going to get rejected.
After the machine told me it was unable to sell to me at the moment, I decided to try again. After going through the process and getting my face scanned a second time, I got rejected again. I studied my ID, fixed my hair some more, and decided to smile this time just like in the picture. And finally, success. The machine started whirring as it processed my ammo.
Okay, so after a third try, I've successfully been able to purchase ammunition.
After a few seconds, the machine dropped the box of ammo. I grabbed my ammo and walked out of the store as another customer made his way to the machine. I had some concerns about my security after getting my face scanned, but Major says their company doesn't share or sell their customers' data. It uses facial recognition purely to confirm an individual matches their ID. They're also aiming to increase their offerings at the machine.
Some of the things that we're working on is the ability to sell like NRA memberships or hunting licenses or fishing licenses. Concealed carry insurance, which a lot of people like to have for states that have concealed carry.
After news of the vending machine in Canyon Lake began to spread, some Texans raised concerns about individuals who may purchase ammo to use for interpersonal, domestic, or mass gun violence. But Major says that the machine can only hold so much ammo, and people are more likely to purchase hundreds of rounds of ammo online than from their vending machine.
And there's a limited supply inside that machine. It's not like there's a lot of ammo, right? We have to restock it regularly.
Customers who visited the ammo vending machine included farmers and hunters who say they were in favor of its placement in the store. One customer called the machine, quote, weird, and another said he wasn't a gun owner, so he was apathetic towards it. Organizations like Texas Gun Sense say that the vending machines will contribute to a worsening gun violence crisis in the state.
To make it just easier to access firearms and ammunition, I mean, it's really questionable if that's the right direction to go in.
That's Nicole Golden. She's the executive director for Texas Gun Sense, an organization that has been pushing for common sense gun laws. She says she thinks many people are concerned about ammo vending machines because they worry about gun violence.
They want to see things pass that are going to be preventing these tragedies for themselves, their families, their neighbors, and communities. And so instead, we just see more access. And this is an example of more access.
Major says that it is a responsibility of every American to mitigate risk and practice gun safety. He says American Rounds encourages responsible gun ownership and aims to offer ammunition to people who want to safely practice their Second Amendment right.
These stores, if you think about it, most of them are in rural locations. Oftentimes, people might have to drive anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour to get to a nearest sporting goods store.
In June, the U.S. Surgeon General declared gun violence a public health crisis in the United States. Golden says Texans have every right to question the installation of these machines.
When they know that more than 4,000 Texans are shot and killed every year, that's true no matter what.
The impact of these vending machines is yet to be seen because they are so new, but critics say they will be watching. I'm Kayla Badia in Canyon Lake, Texas.
There is a cave in the San Antonio area where so many bats call home that when they fly off for dinner time at sundown, they show up on the weatherman's radar. It can appear like there's a thunderstorm, but it's actually the Bracken Bat Cave. Texas Public Radio's Jack Morgan brings us the story.
Radar isn't picking up rainfall. It's picking up bats taking flight. There are so many that if you're close by, you can even hear them.
We call it a bat-nado. That's so intense.
Fran Hutchins is director of Bat Conservation International.
We're sitting here at Bracken Cave Preserve, and Bracken Cave is the home to the largest colony of bats in the world.
Just about 5 miles northeast of the city limits, Bracken Cave is an eye-shaped hole in the ground that's about 650 feet wide and 117 feet deep. It would be a lot deeper if it weren't for the bat guano.
And that guano has accumulated over thousands of years to where it's almost 100 feet deep.
How many bats does it take to generate 100 feet of guano or to impersonate a thunderstorm? Hutchins says they've done the research, and the numbers are staggering.
We have mommy and baby bats in the cave. We started having babies about 10 days ago. So our population went from 8 to 10 million pregnant females up to around 20 million mommies and babies. The babies will start flying in a couple weeks.
The men roost elsewhere, like under Austin's Congress Avenue Bridge or San Antonio's I-35 downtown. Males roosting separate from the females, well, that's just the way that Mexican free-tail bats operate. Hutchins thinks vampire movies pretty well tainted Americans' views on bats.
I am Dracula.
Dracula. The very mention of the name brings to mind things so evil, so fantastic, so degrading. You wonder if it isn't all a dream, a nightmare.
He thinks we need to hit the reset button to understand what the 1,400 species of bats do.
Our fruit bats are important for seed dispersal. We've got pollinating bats, which are basically the nighttime version of honeybees. So there's over 500 species of plants worldwide that bats are responsible for pollinating. And one that a lot of us are familiar with is agave. It's where we get tequila, mezcal, so that's important.
There's even one bat whose favorite treat is scorpions.
Scorpion to a pal bat's like candy. They can hear a scorpion run across the ground and they just fly over and just jump on top of it and start eating it.
The main thing done by these tens of millions of Mexican free-tail bats each night, dining. They eat their body weight in bugs.
So what's really cool with these bats, eating their body weight in bug, which are primarily agricultural pests, who's traveling about 60 miles one way to forage over where we have our corn and cotton and sorghum crops. They're gonna fly 60 miles from here and up to 10,000 feet in altitude, depending on where those large insect swarms are. They're gonna eat their body weight in bugs, which is over 150 tons of bugs tonight. And they're gonna come back, nurse their young, and do this all over again tomorrow.
That 100 feet deep of guano at the cave bottom used to be a harvestable commodity in centuries past.
The Marbach family protected this cave for hundreds of years. mining the guano because it's a great fertilizer, and also it's used in gunpowder production. It's really high in nitrate. So during the Civil War, they used the guano to make gunpowder.
Bracken Cave volunteer Edith Berquist lives nearby.
As the crow flies, maybe a quarter mile. When we moved out here 19 years ago, we didn't even know this was here. A neighbor told us that there was a bat cave, so we immediately went to the website and signed up and came out to see them, and we just became passionate about bats.
She and her husband soon saw the batnado of millions of bats swirling up and flying over their property.
We were just amazed that we were so close that we could see it that well.
Hutchins says the cave doesn't have a well-documented discovery story.
The story goes that some people were in the area. They saw smoke in the sky, and they were following the smoke, and the smoke was actually bats streaming away at the top of the trees, and following that smoke is how they found the cave and the bats.
The cave and the surrounding area were under threat back in the 90s.
Bat Conservation International got involved in 1992 when we purchased the 5 acres of the cave. And now, between the Nature Conservancy and Bat Conservation International and City of San Antonio, Edwards Aquifer Authority, there's almost 6,000 acres of continuous green space. Highway 3009 all the way to Highway 281.
Christy Miner is project coordinator at Bracken.
The preserve is 1,500 acres, so we do a lot of other things. We do, for example, tree surveys where we walk designated areas of the preserve and tag all of our old growth trees to kind of inventory them.
Miner says not all visitors start out as bat fans.
I find it really exciting when people show up and say, oh, my friend dragged me here and blah, blah, blah. And then the bats come out and they're like, okay, I get it.
And really, Miner says that experience of watching the batnado arc up and out of the cave and turn towards the south is incredible.
You don't want to protect something that you don't know anything about or that you're not inspired by, so I think it's a really good experience for people to have.
Fran Hutchins.
That's one of the cool things about having guests out here, especially the kids. When you got a 9-year-old, so they put their phone down and they're watching this amazing spectacle of nature. The tornado of bats is 20 feet away. You can feel the wind from the vortex, and the sound of wing beats is like rain.
In a world of computer screens and AI augmented realities, watching 10 million bats emerge from the cave, it's about as real as it gets.
You have a 9-year-old turn to their parents and say, hey, this is cool. You've accomplished something.
What goes up must come down, and the same goes for the bats. And the return is the most dangerous time for the bats.
Around 5 in the morning, the bats start returning. We see the reverse batnado. Just a little before 6 a.m., we get first light. And that's when the hawks show up for breakfast. And spiraling back in takes too long. So the bats change their behavior, and it literally rains bats because they're diving in at over 30 miles an hour to get into the cave as quickly as possible, so that hawks don't eat them for breakfast.
The hawks are there sometimes in the evenings, too. We saw one fetch his dinner from the batnado leaving the cave.
People have lived in San Antonio all their lives and don't realize we have this amazing natural wonder here.
The Bracken Cave Batnado is available for public viewing most days. You can find out how to go at batcon.org. I'm Jack Morgan in the Hill Country at Bracken Cave.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org. And you can find us wherever you get cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.